Good afternoon. You are tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, the 13th of April, the year 2015. Jeff Brown here, subbing for Scott Burton. Today we'll talk with AEYC's Katie Blagden, public health nurse Claire Geldof, about Tuesday's early learning fair. We'll get a preview of Theater Latitude's 58 production of The Tempest. We'll discuss Tuesday's Interfaith Council meeting featuring a guest from the Suicide Prevention Coalition. And I'll get the details about this month's Mud Rumors event. That Writer's Almanac, Burn Note Music, and Watch today on a Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for the rest of today, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Forecast for tonight, numerous rain showers. Forecast for Tuesday, scattered rain and showers in the morning, then rain showers in the afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, the Juneau School District is pulling texts believed to misrepresent Native people after community members raised concerns. As Lisa Fu reports, a book portraying the boarding school experience was chosen as a replacement.
Nicola Campbell is a First Nations writer from British Columbia. Her children's book, Shinchi's Canoe, is about life in an Indian boarding school. A character describes getting her hair cut and her head washed with kerosene as punishment for not understanding English. Paul Berg is a former teacher and a cultural specialist at Gold Belt Heritage Foundation. He says even though Shinchi's Canoe depicts a boarding school in Canada, he thinks it's accurate to what Alaska Natives experienced.
The stories, the accounts that I've heard from elders have been pretty brutal treatment during the boarding school years in Alaska. So that would not be an exaggeration.
Last year, Berg evaluated the controversial texts which are part of the McGraw-Hill Reading Wonders program. His report on them was the formal complaint that led to their removal. He said the texts misrepresented the historical reality and marginalized the experiences of the victims. Shinchi's Canoe and other books the district is ordering for schools are interim solutions. When the superintendent decided to remove the McGraw-Hill readers, he said they'd be replaced by locally developed material. Berg says this takes time and involves historical research, like interviewing elders. He said it would be great to have material describing Tlingit culture, like ceremonies that take place in the Southeast Native community.
Just having an account of that, even, for example, in the reading program, would be just a good cross-cultural sharing. But also for the Native students, an affirmation in the school system, a part of their lifestyle.
A Juneau school district official says McGraw-Hill plans on replacing the four readers the district removed with new readers at no cost. For National Native News, I'm Lisa Fu in Juneau.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is encouraging tribes to utilize their health facilities to provide nutritious meals to children. A USDA official recently traveled to the Chickasaw Nation in Oklahoma to see its tribal program. KCNP's Brian Brazier has more.
Children between the ages of 1 and 18 who visit the Chickasaw Nation Medical Center and are hungry may now receive a meal at no cost, thanks to a partnership between the Chickasaw Nation Nutrition Services Department and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The At-Risk Child and Adult Food Care Program, along with the Summer Food Grant, provides lunches to school-aged children and adults at adult daycare facilities year-round. But a new program is designed to offer meals to kids at medical facilities, and the Chickasaw Nation is one of the first to provide them.
Nowhere else in Indian country do we have an Indian tribal organization feeding children in our at-risk children's feeding program.
Audrey Rowe is the administrator for Food and Nutrition Service at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. Administrator Rowe visited the Chickasaw Nation to see the program in action, and she hopes other hospitals, including tribal medical centers, will utilize the program. Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby stressed the importance of investing in the health and wellness of all people.
The people here that work with us at Chickasaw Nation are making an investment of time and effort and also funds, and we can get results, and we thank you so much for that.
For more information on child and adult care food programs in your area, contact your state or tribal nutrition office. For National Native News, I'm Brian Brazier.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTO News in Juneau and Karen and FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guests are Katie Blagden from AEYC and Claire Geldof, who is a public health nurse, here to talk about the early learning fair going on tomorrow. Claire and Katie, thank you for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff.
So the event is put on by the Partnerships for Families and Children in Best Beginnings. Can you describe that?
Yeah, sure. So the Partnerships of Families and Children is a group of local organizations who have all come together to collaborate, and they all provide services for families and children around town. So that includes people like organizations like the Juneau Public Library, the school district, Search, Dental, Head Start, Montessori, and all of those people will be here at this event tomorrow night having tables and giving out information about different services that they provide.
And where is it happening?
It is happening at Riverbend Elementary.
And it's free?
Yes, it's free. It is free for all families.
Tell me about AEYC, please.
Sure. So AEYC is an organization that helps support families and providers, and we advocate for services for young children.
Claire Geldof, you're here with the Public Health Service.
Yeah, Jeff.
You're here to talk about immunizations.
Yeah, so public health will be here at this event tomorrow evening at Riverbend. This takes place from 4:30 to 6:30. And we are offering childhood immunizations for those families that are looking to get their children caught up and ready for school. And the Juneau School District is really buckling down as far as letting kids into school that are not up to date on their immunizations. So this is a great way for families to get caught up on their immunization schedule before starting kindergarten.
What kind of immunizations are we talking about?
We're talking about the childhood immunization schedule. So it's the tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis, or whooping cough, as we might know it, measles, mumps and rubella vaccine, varicella. So kind of on that same schedule with getting kids up to date for their five-year-old immunizations.
Is this the Disneyland measles?
Yes, this would be the measles that we're concerned about, and the reason that we do vaccinate our children to keep them safe from measles, which is highly contagious. So if people have questions, too, about the immunization schedule or just are unsure, hey, where should I be? Where should my child be at the age? What's appropriate? They can always look that up on the American Pediatrics website, or they can also consult us at Juneau Public Health Center.
What's the phone number there?
It is 465-3353. And again, we'll be there tomorrow night, myself and another registered nurse, to answer questions. We do ask families, if you have your child's immunization records available, to bring those too, so that we can take a look at those and have those there.
All right.
So the goal of this whole thing is just to have kids prepared for kindergarten, and we're going to help kids and families get registered or prepare for registration for kindergarten, which is coming up pretty soon here. And we'll also have fun games for kids ages 3 to 5, mainly, is who we're targeting. Some snacks and toys from the Turf for Tots at the field house, and then families will be able to get information about immunizations, vision screenings, and just get their child all ready for kindergarten on the first day.
And people walk up to the fair. Can you give me a radio picture of it?
A radio picture of the fair. Yeah, sure. So you walk in, and we're going to set up a little area for kids to kind of go through an obstacle course to get to their vaccinations, to make it really fun to get there. So that
Will parents have to do the same obstacle course?
If they want to, they could go through those tunnels. And then there's going to be a bunch of tables set up, and around the tables will be activities. So while parents are getting information about the services that the different organizations provide that are a part of the partnerships, then kids can be doing activities that are hosted by volunteers from Girl Scouts, from the Juneau School District, Thunder Mountain High School, and then just different community members around town.
I was going to ask who's it for, but it's not for the kids, it's for the parents.
It's for the parents, and we also, it's for the kids to get registered. They want to go to kindergarten. It's good to get registered in advance to help the teachers and the school district prepare for the school year. So,
are there any lectures or discussions on the schedule?
No, there aren't going to be. There's just going to be, we're going to have a table that families can get all of the information that they need about how to prepare their child for kindergarten over the summer and different activities to do, and also, you know, just reading to their kids. We're going to have a little reading corner, and then also an area where they can actually go to get information about registration and different areas that they can register, phone numbers to call, and just get all set up, basically.
Time-wise, how long of an experience should parents be ready for?
It is going to be from 4:30 to 6:30 at Riverbend.
So they should spend the whole 2 hours there?
Well, no, they don't need to. It's really however long they want to spend there and however long it takes for them to get the information that they feel need to be prepared.
Why would you say it's important for kids to be prepared?
I think it's important because it helps the teachers when the children get to school, and the teachers will then be prepared by knowing how many kids they're going to have, and will be able to know about how to accommodate that many children in the classroom. And it's also just helpful for kids to be able to kind of be familiar with things like reading, for example, if they're able to, if they understand different books that or have that relationship with other kids when they get there, they'll feel more comfortable because it's a whole new experience for these children who haven't been in the classroom before.
Claire.
I wanted to add to that, too. So if I am super excited to go to kindergarten and I show up on the first day of kindergarten and I don't have all of my vaccines taken care of, so I'm I haven't completed my series or I'm not compliant with what the school is asking me to do, that means that I might, if I'm a child entering in kindergarten, that means I might not be able to attend. So the school would tell me I need to go to the doctor's office, which in this town can sometimes take a couple days to schedule, be seen, get those vaccines, and then go back through. So this is a great, great preparation and great opportunity for families to get their children vaccinated so that on that first day of school, your kids are ready to go. They can stay and be there.
Remind me where it is and what the time of the hours are, please.
Of course. It's at Riverbend Elementary tomorrow, Tuesday, from 4:30 to 6:30. And it's targeting mainly 3 to 5-year-olds. So.
All right, Katie Blackton and Claire Geldof, thank you for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, we look forward to seeing Juneau families and kids, and we're excited for kindergarten this fall.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
When I was a little kid, not so long ago, I had to learn a lot of stuff. I didn't even know how to dress myself, tie my shoes, how to jump a rope, how to smile for a picture without looking like a dope. But of all the things I learned, my favorite of them all was a little poem hanging on the kindergarten wall. Of all you learn here, remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat, hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. Remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up. Well, it was
first, second, third grade, fourth grade too, where I had to learn the big things the big kids do, to add, subtract, and multiply, read, write, and play, how to sit in a little uncomfortable desk for nearly half a day. But of all the things they taught me, of all the great and small, still my favorite was the poem on the kindergarten wall. Oh, Paul, you'll learn here, remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. Remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up. I've been worried as I look around and see an awful lot of grown-ups acting foolish as can be. I know there's lots of things to know I haven't mastered yet. Still, it seems there's real important stuff that grown-ups soon forget. So I'm sure we'd all be better off if we would just recall that little poem hanging on the kindergarten wall. Of all you'll learn here, remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. And remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up. Of all you'll learn here, remember this the best. Don't hurt each other and clean up your mess. Take a nap every day, wash before you eat. Hold hands, stick together, look before you cross the street. Remember the seed in the little paper cup. First the root goes down and then the plant grows up.
John McCutcheon, it's about 17 minutes past the hour and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau, KRNN FM in Juneau, here on a Juneau afternoon. Jeff Brown, filling in for Scott Burton today. Next, our guests are from Latitude 58 to talk about their next presentation of The Tempest. Happens April 17th and 19th at McPheeters Hall. In the studio, I have Karen Allen, director, and Daniel, Molly, and Rebecca. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having us.
So for people who aren't familiar with The Tempest, you want to give me the plot, please?
Well, it starts out with a magical storm of the Tempest that the wizard Prospero has her fairy Ariel just make this tempest to have this boat crash on the magical island.
And then the wizard proceeds to put everyone into different groups so that way they can discover different things that they didn't quite realize they needed to learn.
And they have adventures along the way.
They have adventures along the way. It's Shakespeare's last play. It's the last one he wrote by himself. He wrote a couple of collaborations after that. And it is, in a lot of ways, his farewell to the art of theater. It is one giant protracted ending. And it doesn't always resolve everything, but it's very much about what it means to be a person and what it means to be a person in extreme situations and absurd situations and what it's like to come to the end of your story.
Karen Allen, you're directing the play. Any special challenges that you run up against?
Well, one of the most interesting challenges we've had with the show is we are a community and a family-based theater, and so we have generations in our show. My youngest actor is 11, and the oldest is north of 40. And it's been very interesting having them all collaborate and work together. We have two parent-child sets working in the show together. We have siblings. We have a set of three siblings. And so it has been fun working with Shakespeare with such a large age range and experience range.
I'd like to ask our actors now what role they play in the play and also what they've learned about acting.
I'm Daniel, and I'm playing Caliban, the half-monster servant of Prospero. Something that's been very useful and have been learning a lot is learning how to reach different levels, because so far in all of the plays I've done, there hasn't been a wide range of emotions that I've had to portray, and so that's something I've learned in this, is how to expand those and then find like the nuances even within an emotion. So not just angry, but like different levels of anger, different levels of, you know, happiness, joy. So
how do you pull that out of yourself?
Oh, how do I pull that out of myself? Well, for one, it really helps to have people around you. I was driving my director home one night, and I was like, well, what more do you want me to pull out of this? And, you know, I thought, you know, I was doing okay, and, you know, which, you know, maybe I was, but.
You were.
And she's like, well, I'd like you to, you know, do this, to find these different levels, and, you know, chewed on it. I was like, how do I do that? But it comes, I mean, it comes somewhat naturally, and when you have to think about it, and like, okay, so I didn't, don't want to just portray it this way. I need to find another way. And it's all just, it's all natural human emotions. And it's just tapping into those different ones.
Molly?
I'm playing Ferdinand, the Prince of Naples. And one of the challenges that I really just enjoyed working with is that everybody thinks, oh, it must be so hard to act angry or happy, but one of the hardest things to do is to fall in love on stage. I will say that for one, especially with one of my close friends who has actually played my monkey brother in the previous play. That has been one of the hardest things, but it's also just a wonderful thing just to learn how to do that, and to just portray that on stage is just a beautiful thing.
Rebecca?
I play Prospero, and the thing that I've learned this play is to be able to access emotions, but at a smaller intensity. Because I have a habit of just, if I'm angry, I'm just really, really angry. But I've been able to learn to be able to pull it back a little bit and be able to be like, oh, okay, so this is how much I need here. This is how much I need here.
Very believable.
For me, the way I make it very, very personal. Like, I think of a time where I had something like that happen, and then I'm able to pull out those emotions better that way. And to make it more realistic, just to be able to read emotions from the audience.
All right. What is the run play?
We open on Friday night, April 17th at 7 p.m., and then we do two shows on Saturday, 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and then we close on a Sunday matinee at 2.
How many people are in the cast?
18.
Is it tough wrangling 18 young people and old people, too?
No.
Are the old people harder to wrangle than the young people?
Yes. Yes. The people I have to separate most often, actually, are the Shetke siblings here, because they are troublemakers, and the over 30 set. The kids are easy. The adults are troublemakers. But they are tremendous fun, and they all collaborate well and work together. And for theater at Latitude 58, actually, because we try to cast as many people as possible, this is actually one of the smaller casts we've had in recent years. So this, compared to Calamity Jane this past fall, 18 people's nothing.
I just forgot what I would ask. I know what I like to do is ask the actors to give their favorite line in the play. So you want to sort of share your line? And tell what character that you're Prospero.
Okay, yeah, so I'm Prospero, and one of my favorite lines is, our revels now are ended. These, our actors, as I foretold you, are spirits.
I'm Ferdinand, and one of my favorite lines is, and for your sake am I this patient log man.
Again, Caliban, and...
Now, before you do it, be in character.
Oh, boy. So there's an argument going and with Prospero's daughter, and she just insulted me, saying, like, I taught you really well, and now you're just a jerk. And my response is, you taught me language, and my prophet aunt is, I know how to curse. The Red Plague rid me for learning your language. So,
all right, I'm glad I asked. Now, for people who don't know, where does the name come from, Latitude Theater at Latitude 58?
Well, it's because Juno is at latitude 58. And we were formed in 2012, and our mission really is to be a family theater, a place where generations can work together. We try to offer quality theater education from people ranging from 4 years old. I believe Cinnamon had a 4-year-old in Anne of Green Gables through, well, still old enough to come to the theater. And we really try to teach everyone to collaborate and learn and grow together.
Now, you're running The Tempest soon.
Yes.
And is there another play, Anne of Green Gables, that you're also doing?
Anne of Green Gables closed yesterday. Cinnamon Simpson, our artistic director, directed that. And yesterday we had standing room only. It's the only time as the stage manager I've ever had to move audience so that we could get the coffin through. Because we stacked McFeeters to the roof. So do get tickets early, and now they're on sale at Vendini, they're on sale at Hearthside Books from cast members, and they will be available at the door.
All right, anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Come have a good show. These kids and adults have worked very, very hard, and it is a beautiful, beautiful story. Don't be afraid of Shakespeare.
You'll laugh really hard.
You will.
All right, thanks, Karen Allen and Daniel and Molly and Rebecca for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 13th of April, 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said, "In matters of style, swim with the current. In matters of principle, stand like a rock." Thomas Jefferson, born in Albemarle County, Virginia, 1743. He wrote the Declaration of Independence. He was this country's minister to France. He was Secretary of State, Vice President, and President. But Thomas Jefferson was also an inventor, a philosopher, a farmer, naturalist, astronomer, a connoisseur of food and wine, and he was a musician. As one of his biographers wrote, he could calculate an eclipse, survey an estate, tie an artery, plan an edifice, try a cause, break a horse, dance a minuet, and play the violin. He was inspired by classic Roman architecture, designed his great estate, Monticello, along classic lines, also the University of Virginia, and a number of buildings in Washington. Jefferson is considered responsible for the neoclassical look of the Capitol. He was a talented astronomer who predicted an eclipse in 1778. He knew physics, anatomy, botany, and geology, and he was a passionate paleontologist. At one point when he was president, he had the East Room of the White House covered with mastodon bones. He was a passionate gardener. He said that he ate meat as a condiment for the vegetables, which constitute my principal diet. In his gardens at Monticello, he grew 330 varieties of vegetables, 170 varieties of fruit. He grew Mexican peppers, beans that had been collected by Lewis and Clark, broccoli from Italy. He loved the English pea. He grew turnips, lettuces, artichokes, tomatoes, eggplants, and squash. And he kept exhaustive notes on them, when they were sown, when they were mulched, which varieties were the tastiest. He had about 5,000 acres of farmland. He did keep slaves to cultivate it. He was dependent on the labor of hundreds of slaves to keep his farms running, and spent a large part of his days supervising them. He said, "From breakfast or noon to dinner, I am mostly on horseback, attending to my farm." And he loved music. Jefferson wrote, "If there's a gratification which I envy any people in this world, it is Italy and its music. This is the favorite passion of my soul." He played the violin, sometimes the cello and the harpsichord, and he loved to sing. He walked or rode around Monticello, singing and humming to himself, Thomas Jefferson. Here's a poem for today, an old poem, a sonnet from the 17th century by Bartholomew Griffin. "Fair is my love that feeds among the lilies growing in the pleasant garden, where Cupid's mount, that well-beloved hill, is, and where that little god himself is warden. See where my love sits in the beds of spices beset all round with camphor, myrrh, and roses, and interlaced with curious devices, which her from all the world apart encloses. There doth she tune her lute for her delight, and with sweet music makes the ground to move, whilst I, poor I, do sit in heavy plight, wailing alone my unrespected love, not daring to rush into so rare a place that gives to her and she to it a grace. A sonnet by Bartholomew Griffin, Fair is My Love, That Feeds Among the Lilies. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. And by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon. Our next guests are here from the Interfaith Council. There's a meeting going on tomorrow with a speaker from the Suicide Prevention Coalition. In the studio with me now are Pat McClure, Julie Nyhart, and Gail Trivett. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff, for the invitation.
The first question, what is the Interfaith Council?
The Interfaith Council is a group in Juneau that meets the second Tuesday of every month, and we're a variety of faith communities, some Christian, some are not Christian, and our gatherings are an opportunity for folks to share information and announcements about what's going on in our various faith communities, and then usually there's a speaker that will address an issue that we all can hopefully respond to in some way or shape or form. So we share information and we make an effort to know each other better. We learn about and from other faiths. We try to engage in dialogue and fellowship and work for the common good of the community of Juneau.
But how many groups are involved?
I recently started facilitating this group, and at present, I think my email list has 30 hits on it, not to say that some communities don't have more than one person who may or may not represent their faith community on any, but all faith communities are welcome.
What's the general schedule of activities for each meeting?
We start, because it's during a lunchtime, noon to 1, I show up at 11:45, and if people want to bring their lunches, I'll put out some food and people can visit and eat. And then from noon to about 12:15, we do introductions and announcements so that everybody knows who everybody is and what might be happening, like baking cookies for the Glory Hole this next Sunday. Is it? Yeah.
Open bowl.
For the empty bowls or, you know, things like that. And then we have a guest speaker. So last month, Stuart Cohen spoke to us about climate change, and this month the folks from the Suicide Prevention Coalition will be with us. And previous to that, we discussed housing in Juneau and also child care opportunities in Juneau.
You know, you want to talk to me about the Suicide Prevention Coalition, please?
Yes, thank you for having us today. I'll give a brief history of the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition. We started about 7 years ago in response to a variety of unrelated youth suicides. Brendan Kiernan was a school psychologist at Juneau School District. He applied for a grant from the state of Alaska to implement the signs of suicide curriculum in the schools, and he realized that he needed support from the community. And so he put together a really broad coalition and he had people from, besides the Juneau School District, Juneau Youth Services, JAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, the police department, the faith communities, Catholic Community Services, public health, the hospital, Tlingit and Haida, UAS, quite a few private volunteers. So the course of putting together this coalition, we realized that there was a lot that needed to happen in the community, both for awareness and for resources. And so we put together two websites. One is called JunoSuicidePrevention.org, in which we have specific information related to suicide prevention here in Juneau, as well as general information about suicide. And then we also put together a website called JunoMentalHealth.org, which has a broader information about mental illnesses as well as resources local again. And we did a survey of all of the providers in town. And so if you look on our website, we have information about the various counselors, psychiatrists, and organizations that are helpful for mental health. We also put together a lot of promotional material that we promoted our websites and the Alaska Care Line, which is it's a 24-hour helpline that people can call if they are concerned for themselves or for someone else. And they also have a lot of information that they can give about suicide prevention.
Do you have that number at all?
Yes, I do. The Care Line is 1-877-266-4357. And that number is also listed on our website, JunoSuicidePrevention.org. And it's also on our other website, JunoMentalHealth.org.
Julie, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay. And our organization also has offered trainings in the community, and we are continue to partner with the state to offer trainings. We have a training that's called QPR Gatekeeper, and a contact number if a person is interested in receiving this training, or an organization, which we are hoping to have more of. They can contact Hillary Young at Juno Youth Services. Her phone number is 523-1605. And that's a very important thing that we try to convey to everyone, is that if you're worried about someone, the most important thing, if you're afraid they might be thinking of suicide, you need to ask them specifically, are you thinking of suicide or are you thinking of killing yourself? And those questions are hard to do because it's against our culture. We don't like to intrude on people that much. And also I think we're afraid of what do we do next if they say yes. But, and we're not going to put the idea into their head, because if they're not thinking of it, they'll say no. And, I mean, what's the worst they can do is say, well, why did she think that? And look at, perhaps they do have some issues going on, but it's not suicide. But on the other hand, if they are thinking of suicide, it does give them an opening to talk. And if you should talk with someone and they said, yes, I am thinking of suicide, it's very important to listen with empathy. It's very important to then get them to additional help. Professional help. We aren't trained to do that ourselves as private individuals, but that's where, you know, the training would come in handy, and also again getting information from the Care Line and our websites. So thank you.
What's the phone number again?
Okay, the phone number for the Care Line is 1-877-266-4357, and then the contact number for getting additional training here in Juneau is Hillary Young at Juneau Youth Services. Her number is 523-1605.
Julie, what kind of a problem is suicide these days in Juneau?
Well, suicide is a broad problem across the state, definitely, and also in Juneau as a specific smaller community. We have recently done an assessment in our community. We no longer have the grant from the Department of Education, and now we have one from the Division of Behavioral Health, which required this large community-wide assessment. And I don't have the numbers in my head as to what the extent of suicide is, although we do have that information available. And we would encourage people to come to the Interfaith Council tomorrow. We have a group of people who will present more details on that kind of information at that time. In the meantime, I would like to tell you a little bit about what we did learn in this assessment. And we found that there is a great correlation between traumatic experiences and suicide. So certainly some people have just for no apparent reason and nothing in their background end up with a mental illness that may put them at risk for suicide. But on the other hand, there are many traumatic experiences that are inclined to increase that risk for suicide. And one of the things that had happened in the distant past, back in the 70s, this is, was that an ACEs study. So that was done with a group of adults who were all in, were working adults with Kaiser Permanente, and they wanted to check and find out about their past and the relationship to their current health, both physical health and mental health. And we ended up then calling this the ACEs study, and it's adverse childhood experiences. And the more adverse childhood experiences one has, the greater the possibility of the risk for suicide along the way. So what our coalition decided in meeting is that it's important to talk about these things. Gail already mentioned how important it is to talk about suicide itself. We're afraid to even mention that word. And it's important to have people talk about it. We'll know more about the extent of suicide in our community if we are willing to discuss it so that suicides are not hidden. In addition, it's important to talk about past experiences, not only childhood trauma, but other trauma, sexual assault, or maybe even something that just caused your whole house to be out of kilter, maybe a major fire, and all of a sudden you have no place to go. So any major traumatic experience is something that is going to put you at greater risk for suicide. Again, the more bad experiences, the greater the risk, but there are also protective factors. So already the Juno Suicide Coalition has, Suicide Prevention Coalition has been working on protective factors. And one of the ways that they do that in the schools is with the Sources of Strength program. And that is one that Hillary Young works with in the schools. And there are many students involved and then a great number of adult advisors. So it's very important for people to be involved in positive activities and to know that they matter to folks. So one of the greatest protective factors is to make each individual know that that person is important and that they contribute to the community. So as adults, it's important for us to find ways to involve in youth and to encourage them. As we speak with the interfaith community tomorrow, that would be another time that there's an opportunity to say, well, you've got youth in your groups. Are you sure that you're welcoming them? And are you sure that you are accepting what they can do as really important to your group? And then by itself, spiritual and religious connections are another protective factor. So those are some of the things that I think are important, and as we talk to adults and say, you know, help when you can, we have a Girls on the Run program in our community, and that's an area that's always looking for some more people to be, I think they call them coaches, is mm-hmm, that right? Mm-hmm. Coaches for Girls on the Run. And then, of course, we have Big Brothers and Big Sisters, so you can help by doing that. Another thing we would like people in our community to do is to learn more about suicide. You're asking me specific questions, Jeff, that I'm not answering properly.
You're doing fine.
But we can answer those questions, and we encourage people to learn more. The Juno Suicide Prevention Coalition will be having a little conference, a mini summit in June. It'll be on the 18th and 19th, and we would certainly invite all of the public to come as they can to learn more about our assessment and ways that everybody can help prevent suicide in our communities.
We've got an open spot on a June afternoon, so when you're ready to schedule something, please give me a call.
All right. Thank you. We will do that.
I've been talking to Pat McClear, Julie Neihardt, and Gail Trivett about the meeting tomorrow at noon. And remind me where it is.
It is at Northern Light Church at noon, upstairs right outside the kitchen.
And that's the Interfaith Council.
That's the Interfaith Council, yes.
And Gail, I'm going to ask you to repeat that phone number one more time because it's an important number to know
okay,
about.
Okay, the Alaska Care Line number is 1-877-266-4357. And also, if you are interested in receiving training for being better equipped for helping with suicide prevention, that number is Hillary Young at JYS, Juno Youth Services. Her number is 523-1605. Thank you.
Thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, sir. I think we covered all the bases, and I appreciate the opportunity to invite people.
This is Bird Note. Nearly half of all the bird species in the U.S. and Canada depend on one amazing resource, the boreal forest.
I'm Dr. Jeff Wells. I'm the Science and Policy Director for the Boreal Songbird Initiative. The boreal forest is a northern forest. It's the area that stretches from the interior of Alaska across northern Canada all the way to Newfoundland.
And it's home for up to 3 billion nesting birds. If you imagine each bird represents 1 second in time, 3 billion is about 95 years. That's a lot of birds.
The Pacific loon, black scoters, surf scoters,
right-winged scoters,
bustlehead, common golden eye.
In fact, many U.S. backyard birds were born and raised in the boreal. And about 1 billion migrants from the forest spend the winter in the U.S. But what's unique about the boreal forest is that it's still pretty much untouched.
It also has some of the largest wetlands left on Earth, the largest reserve of fresh water, some of the longest rivers that have never been dammed. The last large mammal migrations take place in the boreal forest. And so there's all these different biodiversity and conservation features that are still retained in the boreal forest. It's one of the last large, pristine ecosystems left on the planet.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
The Alaska State Improv Festival is back with four nights of fun from April 23rd until April 26th. See Improv Boston All-Stars, Portland Duo, Joyride, and many others at Alaska's largest celebration of unscripted comedy. Shows begin at 6 p.m. in McTheaters Hall. Visit asifest.com for showtimes, listings, and tickets. Thursday to Sunday, April 23rd until the 26th, the Alaska State Improv Festival, asifest.com.
You tune to June Afternoon, the Improv Fest. I went last year. It's a great, great show for people of all ages. In the studio with me now are Rich Moniak and Steve Suing, here to talk about the Mudroom's presentation for tomorrow night for the month of April. Thank you for being in the studio with me today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Thanks for having us, Jeff. Good to be here.
So for people who don't know what Mudrooms is, Steve, could you educate us, please?
Yeah, Mudrooms is a storytelling event that happens once a month, typically. Well, it happens every season to date in the fall and winter months. A storytelling event that happens where seven speakers get up and give us a story on a topic that's designated for that evening. And the stories are 7 minutes in duration. And we try to offer some themes that are pretty broad in nature so the stories can come from a lot of different directions. This is open to the community. We get a wide range of people to the stage. We try to get as wide a range as possible. Also get a wide range of attendees from people that are still in grade school to people that are in college to people in their 20s and on up. So beyond the storytellers, it gives a real opportunity for people to tell their stories that might have not been heard before or heard in a large audience. And it also gives the audience a great opportunity to connect with other audience members and connect with the storytellers in a different way and maybe meet someone or make a connection that they didn't know that they had.
This is like a national movement because there are several other cities in America that grab people and have them tell their stories.
Yeah, most definitely. The concept for this came from Arctic Entries in Anchorage, and we're very happy to say that we kind of initiated some energy for a new storytelling event, a newer storytelling event that's happening in Kodiak called Galley Tables. Because of someone that was here in Juneau, saw the mudrooms experience and how that worked, and took it back to their community and started a storytelling event there in Kodiak.
And it's happening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Northern Lights Church, downtown Juneau.
And the idea is to get there a little bit early because of sight lines. The closer you are, the better you'll have.
Yeah, I think, there's a lot of folks that I see show up early that still stick to the back of the room. So sit wherever you're comfortable. I think the one thing that we are known for, that more often than not, we do start promptly at 7 o'clock and try to keep the program to an hour and a half as much as possible.
And there's an admission fee?
The admission fee is $7 cash, and we're really grateful that so many people have supported this event because of this $7 cash. This is a non-organization. We pass these funds on to a nonprofit here in the community. For this event in particular, it's going to go to the Southeast Alaska Independent Living Organization that does great work for people that have all sorts of handicaps within our community. To date, this is season 4. The second to last show of season number 4 of Mudrooms, but to date we've been able to pass along just over $38,000 of entry fees to Mudrooms to nonprofits in the community of Juneau.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yep. It's, the $7 isn't much of an admission fee for kind of the lifelong connections that we've seen made at these events and the difference it makes to the organizations that get to see these funds.
Jumaniak, you are here with the schedule of activities for tomorrow night.
For tomorrow night, we've got Kristen Cox, India Busby, Mark Miller, Phil Smith, Eric Caldwell, Molly Briggs, and Margot Warren. And we've got music, and the music will start before the show and be run through intermission. And it's going to be by Marshall Williams with Guy Unzinger and Andrew Madsen.
And is there a theme?
The theme, yeah, the theme. First job, worst job. Everybody's had one of those, or both.
What makes you volunteer for Mudrooms, Rich?
I became fascinated by Mudrooms when it first began. I loved the idea of stories. It was something that I got involved with Veterans for Peace and working with a storytelling group around healing trauma in Seattle. It's called Voices in Wartime. We did a lot of poetry and storytelling from veterans and witnesses and victims of war. And it's a very powerful way for, as Steve said, for people to connect to community, but also to connect to your deeper self, to retell stories. It's storytelling when you're in a psychologist's office, you're sitting in a chair telling a story. When you go home at night after a hard day's work, you tell your wife a story, your husband a story, and you know, it relieves a lot of stress, and it's so I was fascinated by it from a psychological point of view and a community point of view.
Steve, how about you? Do you have any thoughts on it?
I really like the sense of community. I have a lot of respect for stories as well. I think that in this day and age, stories can come in just a number of characters or just a brief post on social media, and so I think to some degree. We miss out on the facet and the quality of a good story. I grew up in a home for 18 years that did not have a television. And so most of my childhood memories and what I knew about outside of the home and the things that I was exposed to in a fairly conservative family came through storytelling, and it came through the radio. So I've got a real respect for stories and good stories, but the sense of community that the Mudrooms events create also fascinated me. And it's just such a wide range of ages. It's a wide range of beliefs, and it's a wide range of cultures that come together to connect for this event. And to me, that made it worth the time to invest in the Mudrooms group.
You mentioned radio. We should go on by saying that this is broadcast on KTOO News at 7 o'clock on the fourth Thursday of each month.
Yeah, and we really appreciate the support of KTOO. not only rebroadcasting our shows, but all the support and the audio that we have for our events, and then inviting us to come in multiple times to talk about the events just before they're to happen. So KTO has been a great partner, definitely the value of community radio, and we definitely appreciate everything they've done to put our cause forward for Mudrooms.
All right, tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, best job, worst job is the theme.
First job, worst job.
What's the tellers again? The tellers again, please.
Kristen Cox, India Busby, Mark Miller, Phil Smith, Eric Caldwell, Molly Briggs, and Margot Waring.
Yeah, and I just want to mention real quickly, right now we're conducting a survey. This is the first time that we've engaged with our Mudrooms community like this. There's three ways that people can take the survey. They can jump on our website, mudrooms.org. On that first landing page towards the bottom of it, there's a special note, and there's a link to a survey that can be taken directly from that page. There's also our Mudrooms Facebook page. There's a link there to the survey. And tomorrow night we're going to have hard copies available to all the attendees. It's a very quick survey, but it's the first time we've engaged with our audience like this to give us some feedback. We don't necessarily want all good feedback. We want some constructive feedback about how to make the program better, what is lacking, and what Mudrooms should potentially look like as we move forward into season number 5.
All right, Steve Suing and Rich Moniak, thank you again for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Nope, just come tomorrow night. It'll be a packed house like it always is, and you'll enjoy it.
Thanks for the time.
Support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
Here's a little bit of music from the Revelers. They're performing for the June Jazz and Classics Festival on May 2nd. Cloudy skies with a chance of rain, chance of snow later on. Forecast for Tuesday, rain showers likely with snow level to 800 feet. Forecast for Tuesday night, rain with snow level to 1,000 feet. High temperatures around 36 degrees. Wednesday, rain showers with high temperatures around 45 degrees. Tonight at 7 o'clock, Mind Over Matter with Dr. Lane Schroeder. Topic tonight is Sexual Violence Awareness Month with guest Fairlyn Tabachnik.
Toi, tu veux plus moi.